A while ago, the Wall Street Journal profiled people who, as children, had lost a parent. The piece was based in large part on a study by Johns Hopkins Children's Center in Baltimore. And I was intrigued because my father had died when he was 50 and I was 20, and I was curious to see how others had fared. The piece began with Jonathan Herman, a 33-year-old healthcare executive in New York who had lost both his parents to cancer before he was 13. Herman said, "I'd give up a year of my life for just half a day with my parents. Oh, I've had friends complain that they have to drive to see their parents for Thanksgiving. But I tell them I'd do anything to spend Thanksgiving with my parents. I'd give up a year of my life just for a half a day with my parents." Here's somebody who would somehow make a deal with death to renew the life of someone else. Yes, death is consuming. It casts a long shadow. It seems that when polled, 57% of adults who lost parents during childhood shared Mr. Herman's yearnings, saying they too would trade a year of their lives. Their responses, part of the Hopkins survey, indicate that bereavement rooted in childhood often leaves emotional scars for decades. 73% of those who were surveyed said they believed their lives would be much better if their parents hadn't died young. 66% said that after their loss, they felt like they weren't a kid anymore. It's as if once death has got its hands on you, there's no letting go. Oh, we like to think we can dodge death. And when death does occur, we deny that anything significant has happened to someone we love. We don't say they died, we say they passed. We don't call it a funeral, we call it a celebration of life. We're intensely uncomfortable with bodies at funerals. Most of the time, the focus isn't on the dead person at all. We keep the focus on us. And so we don't ponder the journey from this world to the next. Instead, we focus on ourselves, the mourners, from traveling from sorrow to stability. We try to forget death. We try to put it aside and resolve not to think about it. But that in no way diminishes the power of death. Death is inevitably lurking out there, waiting to pounce. The research chronicled that death is more powerful than we care to admit. Its hold is more tenuous. Children whose parents commit suicide, for instance, are 3 times as likely to commit suicide themselves later in their lives, according to the just-released study by Johns Hopkins Children's Center in Baltimore. The study also found that those who lost parents when they were young are more likely to be hospitalized for depression or to commit violent crimes. I think of a memoir I once read, "The Kids Are All Right," where 4 siblings from Bedford, New York, orphaned in the 1980s, described death's broad wake in harrowing detail. They spoke of growing up as lost souls, of turning to drugs and other troubling behaviors to cope. Gary Jonicki was 13 when his mother died of cancer. He said, "I gave up on my good grades and dropped out of high school. I didn't do anything except drink, do drugs, and be depressed. I was confused and angry, and adults didn't know how to help me. I had a good relationship with my dad, but he was also grieving." It's as if death, having conquered one soul, seeps into the lives of those who are left, metastasizing, as it were, into family and friends, infecting everyone left standing like some kind of communicable disease. Oh, there are those for whom the early loss of a parent brings out resilience, and the individual becomes more responsible and independent. But even when death is met by responsibility, there is a price to pay. Kids who get through by being stoic and behaving like adults have their childhoods cut short. As they focus on trying to keep the surviving parent happy or stepping up to handle the responsibility the deceased parent left behind. Donica Sally, a 50-year-old cosmetics sales director in Richmond, Virginia, understands well the ramifications of losing a parent. When she was 13, her 44-year-old father drowned while on vacation in the Bahamas. "This was the onset of my depression," she said. "My mom tried to fill the void by buying me things." Then, as an adult, Miss Sally's husband died after falling off the roof of their home while cleaning the gutters. He was also 44. The 17-year-old son, their 17-year-old son, has since attended a camp for kids who've lost parents. "It's a safe haven for him," Miss Sally says. "There's something about being with people who've been through it." "When my father died, I didn't know anyone who'd lost a parent. I was alone." It's as if death is a dark hole that seeks to entomb us in solitary silence. "I haven't heard my father's voice since I was 4 years old. It doesn't exist on tape. It hurts not to hear him," said one 33-year-old. Death robs us of connections and the relationships that make us who we are. And it robs not just children who have lost parents, but parents who have lost children as well, probably more so. I remember a friend whose younger sister had died of cancer in middle age telling me that one day he called his mother to check on her. And she said, "Oh, I'm awfully glad you called today. It's the anniversary of your sister's death." Well, it wasn't the anniversary of his younger sister's death, and he thought, yes, this must be the beginning of dementia. Only after his mother died, going through her papers, did he find that there had been an older sister who had died in stillbirth before he was born. He never knew of that sister, and that was the sister whose anniversary, the anniversary of whose death his mother was keeping the day he happened to call her. You see, we are captives of death, held hostage by death, and we need healing and rescue. We need restoration. The relationships that are ended by death, the love that has been ended in death, we yearn that it be restored. "Who will deliver me from this body of death?" St. Paul asks in his letter to the Romans. Well, in today's gospel, death appears to call the shots. A widow, that is a woman on the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, has been visited by death. Her adult son, that is her only means of survival, her pension, her Social Security, her Medicare, has been taken from her by death. Her son's death means that she too will die, for she was undoubtedly dependent on her son for her own survival. Everything in the story is moving inexorably toward death. Everything in life moves inexorably toward death. All that lives dies. Death is inevitable. Death, when you think about it, controls every situation. That is, until Jesus shows up. And just by showing up, the march toward death is reversed. Jesus enters, and the corpse rises. Death is defeated, and a dead young man is given back to his grieving mother alive. There is a future where, before Jesus, there was nothing but a dead end. And so the bystanders see and respond, God has looked favorably upon his people. And note that here in the gospel, death is not dealt with through therapy, not by looking for closure. The only remedy for death is Jesus Christ. The crowd calls Jesus a great young prophet. Yes, Jesus is one who speaks the truth, but he is more than a great prophet. He is the one who confronts life's inevitabilities and death's terrible tyranny and fundamentally changes the direction of the story. There is a fresh, unexpected possibility because of the presence of Jesus. Death is countered by the one who, in resurrection, defeated death and rose to new life. Well, of course, this is the victory we celebrate on Easter morning. That day at the cemetery, that place of rest and peace for the dead, the earth quaked. The huge stone placed by the soldiers before the entrance was rolled away, and an angel, a messenger of God, was perched impertinently upon that rock. And that angel preached the first Easter sermon. Don't be afraid. You seek Jesus? He was crucified? Well, he's risen. Come, look at where he once lay in the tomb. And then that angel commissions the women to become Jesus' preachers. Go tell the men that he's already gone back to Galilee, and there you will meet him. It was a typically Jesus sort of moment, with people thinking they were coming close to where Jesus was resting, only to find that he's on the move. Go. Jesus is God in motion, on the road, constantly heading somewhere. But you see, resurrection doesn't just happen on Easter morning. Resurrection happens whenever Jesus shows up. I think of the great Byzantine icon that depicts Jesus in the jaws of hell, giving a hand to those who had died, lifting them up out of their coffins. Jesus doesn't leave us where he finds us, not in life, not in death. And so we who are dying are not defeated by death, because we know of death's defeat. There's no explaining this. I can only proclaim it. Jesus has decisively done something about death. Christ is risen. You heard that proclamation here on Easter morning, but this morning I want to say it with a new twist. Christ has risen for you. Let me put that in the future tense. Christ has not only done something about death, Christ will do something about your death. Amen.